Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
So yesterday, I was fired up to vote, right? Always a big deal. How many times in your life do you vote? Not often. So, I iron a shirt. Get ready to go to my polling place. Figuring, you know, like today, like you're going to stand in line and wasn't exactly what I was looking to do. So, take one of my flasks things and, put the Crystal Light peach mango flavored, I don't know what you call it, Crystal Light. Peach mango is my go-to, just for the record. I started drinking peach mango green tea, and then I bought peach mango. It's without the green tea in it, and it tastes much better. So that's my go-to. But I can't always find it. I can find it at Target and then some other local stores, Vons, sometimes Stater Brothers, which is a Southern California chain, all by my house. But sometimes nobody's got it. So peach mango green tea is my fallback. And then my second fallback is I don't know why I do that all the time, but I do. Because it's odd, right? Which I guess is what makes it good. So then my second fallback is peach. Not peach. Is a fruit punch. But the problem with fruit punch is that it's red. And if you spill it all, you look like an idiot. Right? The whole red thing. So I fill my flask, grab my ballot, put a pen in my pocket, get in my car, and I go to the ballot place. Right? So I drive in, and I'm expecting a bunch of cars there. And I don't see too many cars there. And I see the signs that say polling site, blah, 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 blah. And so I go over there. And I walk in and everybody, you get greeted. Hi, welcome. And I look around. I'm like, nobody's here. And I'm like, we know. And so this was Monday. They were open Sunday. And they said Sunday would be like an hour between people. I said, you know, I thought about coming, but I thought, well, they're not going to be open on Sunday. I know they opened early, but I didn't think, you know, they'd be open Sunday. Well, they were. So I cast my vote. And you know what? I have to say this. I'm critical of voting machines, and I don't like them. My own opinion is that it should be a paper ballot that you fill out, which mine was. It was two pieces of paper, one double-sided, for all the initiative ballot initiatives here in California. And then I took it and fed it through the, you know, the Scantron machine or whatever we call those machines now that read them. And I think that's the way to do elections. If you don't have a document and it's only electronic in form, I don't like that. And that way, you know, you ought to be able to recount it and things like that. So anyhow, so I went and voted and came home. It was nine. I thought it was going to be this big, you know, long line thing. Not so much. So, yeah, so I voted. So I felt I had done my, you know, my patriotic duty. So I'd encourage you to get out there and vote. And take a friend. Somebody needs a ride or anything like that. You know, the other thing that's been weighing on me since I actually watched Shelby Steele's What Killed Michael Brown again last night. I watched it with Colleen, my 17-year-old, and we had a discussion a couple times during it as we watched it. And it's kind of interesting because Colleen's got a part-time job now that she goes to. And so we're talking about his message in the movie. And I said, so what do you think his message is? And she looked at me and she said, that you have to help yourself. I said, exactly. And I said, let me ask you a question. You go to work, right? She said, yeah. Now, I will tell you this. Colleen, like all of our kids, has been raised there's some horizontal themes in life. One is get off your dead ass. Two is try hard. Three is be respectful of everybody. Right? And help. As often as you can help people. So those are the horizontal themes of Colleen's life. And, I mean, from me, from my ex-wife, Susan. And we are relentless about that. She also has heard it, because she's the youngest of four, from her brothers and sisters. And so she goes to work here at a job she was very excited, to get. And I don't like standard time. I'm not a fan of it. And my body's not adjusting well to it. So anyway, so she goes to work, and before she starts, you know, I have my normal things that I say to my kids. Hey, you go there, and you work your ass off. Do you understand me? She says, yep. So the first day she goes, and, you know, she's the newest person where she works. And she works at a retail store. They sell kind of cool beach clothes, kind of California-themed apparel. So trendy stuff. And So she gets sent to the back to unbox stuff, to tag it, right, and then refold it. Now, that's kind of a thankless job, right? There was 8 boxes of it. So I guess the person who was supervising Colleen, the store manager, comes back and Colleen, just before Colleen was supposed to get off, and looks and says, oh my God. And Colleen says, yes. And she says, you're almost through all 8 boxes. And Colleen said, if I had another 30 minutes, I would get to the last box. And the girl said, that's incredible. So Colleen said, well, thank you. And so then last week, she's been working there for like 3 weeks. And last week, a different manager tells her, hey, I am so proud of you for Colleen's work ethic. So she and I started talking about that. I said, let me ask you this. Who's the one that makes you work hard? And she says, me. I said, that's right. I said, and if you keep doing things like that, guess what's going to happen? She said, I'll get promoted. And guess what happens when you get promoted? And then she smiled and she said, I make more money. Exactly. And if you keep doing those things in your life, that's how you get ahead. You have to be better. You have to mean more to that business. You have to be the one they want to have working at a certain time. That's how you get ahead. I said, so in this documentary you just saw, what is the message to black people with welfare and vouchers? And she says that somebody else is going to take care of you. And I said, that's his message. And then, you know, we had a conversation. Can you actually say that? And the answer to that was no. Right? And this is, you know, us talking about saying it at a high school setting or whatnot. She said, most people, Dad. I said, let me ask you this. You've watched this documentary. Is there anything that you've seen that surprised you? And she said, well, I've heard about this. I don't really know all the facts. But, you know, she said, you know that diagram where it shows what happened with the cop? And you hear all those black people who were witnesses say the same thing? He was clearly fighting the police officer, you know, with his upper torso inside the police car. He clearly assaulted the police officer. And you hear male voices, female voices, all blacks, black voices. And then you hear that he then ran away. The police officer got out, had his gun down by his side, multiple voices. Then Mike Brown stops near the sidewalk, and he kind of paces for a second or two. And then he turns, and he does a shuffle step, and then he runs to the police officer. And you hear again voices saying it. Police officer engages him. Then you see George Stephanopoulos talking to the police officer. And Darren Wilson says, and I backed up. And then you hear these black voices say, and then he backed up. And then you hear one black woman say, if I would have been that police officer, I would have shot him too. And then you hear Darren Wilson say, if he would have got to me, he would have killed me. I knew that. And I knew I was well within my rights to, you know, to use deadly force. And so Colleen said, I hadn't seen that. And I said, okay. And then you see what was on the news. And she looked at me and she said, yeah, that's crazy, Dad. I said, yeah. I said, so I don't expect you. So we were talking about critical thinking skills then. I said, you know, calling the truth is important. And it's important because you can't solve a problem unless you define it. And I said, if you always want to sound really smart, I said, a friend of mine does this. She said, yeah. I said, when you're in a discussion like that, stop the discussion and say, hey, can I ask everybody a question? What problem are we solving? So if you can't get to the truth, you won't define the problem that you're trying to solve. So it's very interesting discussion with my 17-year-old daughter last night, which I enjoyed. Today, you know, I think on everybody's mind is what comes next. So in my informal poll, of my friends is mixed. It's at 60-40, right? That the president will be reelected. And here are the majority of the premises. One, Trump is always underrepresented in polls. And just like in 2016, if they're close, he's underrepresented, he'll win, which is pretty interesting. So another interesting part of that is pollers believe that their livelihood is at stake here, that they got it wrong, right? They got it wrong. 2016 was going to be Hillary Clinton's coronation. And in 2020, will they get it wrong again? And if they do, they will effectively be out of business, right? Only a few of them that, you know, that have seen it correctly. Will be relevant anymore. The rest of them won't be relevant. So that's kind of interesting. The other thing, you're watching headlines now. Europe is implementing a whole another series of lockdowns. So the question in my head is, well, why? What's going on? Like, what's changed that cases in the United States are spiking? So I thought I would go through some interesting data with you, right? And this is from the covidcdc.gov data tracker, okay? So this is number of cases since January 21, 2020. This is rate, okay? Rates are important, more important, in my opinion, more important than total numbers. The highest rate in the nation is in North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Wisconsin, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. Okay. They all have rates of between 4,000 and 6,000 per 100,000. Okay, the highest rates in the country. After that, the next tier is between 3,000 and 3,800. So let's just say 3,000 and 4,000 per 100,000. Idaho, Nevada, Utah, Arizona, Nebraska, Illinois, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Tennessee, South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. Interesting, right? No city with a major metropolitan area other than Illinois. Well, Florida too. Yeah, you'd call Miami a major metropolitan area. So that's interesting. The next layer is between 2,600 and 3,100. So 2,500 and 3,000. Let's just call it that. And that is Montana, Minnesota. There's some dinky states in here. Oh, you know what? I take it back. Well, no, I don't. New Jersey, Rhode Island, North Carolina, Indiana, Texas, Missouri, Kansas. That's the next tier of states. One down from that is between, say, 2,000 and 2,500 per 100,000. And that is Wyoming, New Mexico, Michigan, Ohio, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, New York is in the group with Virginia, Kentucky. New York is in the group, and California is too. I omitted them. They're in the group with Wyoming, New Mexico, California, Alaska's in that group, excuse my poor statistical, Kentucky, Virginia, Maryland. And then the states with the least amount of COVID, and this is since it started, right, are Washington, Oregon, Colorado. Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. Least amount of in Hawaii. Now, what's interesting, now let's talk about deaths since its inception. States hardest hit by deaths as a percentage are North Dakota, Arizona, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Mississippi, and Louisiana, hardest hit by death. You know what? Let me revise that. Massachusetts, New Jersey, Mississippi, and Louisiana are the four top states. Behind that, I got to get my colors right here. Behind that is New York, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Delaware, the District of Columbia, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Arkansas, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, North Dakota, and Arizona. The states, at the bottom, Oregon, Wyoming, Maine, Vermont, Alaska, and Hawaii. So this is percentage of deaths. Now, what got me interested in this is in the last 7 days. What's going on? And what's changed? Is it that people are indoors more because of the cold weather? Because the increase, right? Let me just tell you where it's not increasing. It's not increasing on the West Coast, Washington, Oregon, and California. Somebody from Minnesota calling me. Washington, Oregon, and California, not going up. It's not going up in Hawaii. It's not going up in Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, New York, New Jersey, Virginia, Ohio, or Maryland, or in the district. It is going up in the Upper Plains. It is going up in the highest increases, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota. Right behind them are Idaho, Wyoming, Nebraska, Iowa, Wisconsin, all upper central plains. Now, how about death cases in the last 7 days? Those are death cases. Total cases, you know, are exclusively like in the Midwest. So and if somebody understands why, what happened, you know, what happened to make these cases explode? And I don't have, I haven't seen anybody, people say, oh, you know, people just disregarded it, you know, blah, 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 blah. So I don't, if somebody's got a good reason and can explain it, I'm all ears. Right? And, but I haven't, seen a good reason. There's an article from the BBC. This is coronavirus. Why are infections rising again in the United States? About 7.5 million coronavirus cases. The U.S. has the highest number of confirmed infections in the world, about one-fifth, so 20%. Despite only having 4% of the population. After the initial spike in late March, social distancing restrictions gradually brought infections to heel. By May, case numbers had stabilized, but as states peeled back lockdown measures, cases began to rise, reaching a countrywide high in July. Now, again, what's important is not that cases go up, because cases are going to go up as we loosen the restrictions, right? What's really important is that 7-day moving average of fatalities. Are we protecting the people that are most vulnerable? So, question, why are cases rising? Answer, it's difficult to explain precisely. One contributing factor has been the return to school of U.S. students. A recent study from the U.S. Center for Disease Control, the CDC, on almost 100,000 coronavirus cases reported between 2 August and 5 September, around when college students began to return to school, found that weekly cases among those aged 18 to 22 increased by 55% nationally. The greatest increases came from the Northeast and the Midwest, which is a region located. We now have more than 130 cases identified at more than 1,300 American colleges, 130,000 cases, according to a report from the New York Times. Are deaths still falling? Here's the good news. Virus deaths in the U.S. are continuing to fall, albeit gradually. As of early October, the daily average had reached around 720, a marked drop from the staggering 1,000-plus daily fatalities recorded during the summer. So in spite of, and that's what, and again, I don't think if you're going to function, you have to loosen the controls over it. So when you look at the 7-day averages, right, and that's really what you want to look at, the 7-day averages are rising in terms of cases and falling in continuing to fall in terms of death. And again, the BBC article talks about the upper Midwest. Question is, why? Wisconsin is one of the hardest hit states. Case numbers there have quadrupled in the past month. Hospitalizations have more than doubled. Why? So, but again, the key statistic is mortality, which continues to fall. And as people begin to go back to school and do the things that you know you have to do, because you can't lock the country down forever. So anyway, good morning to you on election day. I don't know how you do election day. I tend not to watch the news till later on this evening. I try to go about my business and not pay too much attention. The other thing I don't pay a lot of attention to is the whole doom and gloom thing. You know, the nation has survived a lot, to include a civil war that we fought over slavery, and to include a depression, to include the Dust Bowl, to include all kinds of things. I mean, in the 60s, again, you had racial division, you had the Vietnam War going on, you had the, and then in the early 70s, you had the president resigning because he was a crook, and the whole government you looked at as corrupt. So the country's been down this road before, and it'll get through it. But it's got to, you know, master some challenges, and that is the digital world we live in, I think, escalates the rhetoric. And I was thinking about that. And I, my own opinion, so what brings it to a head? Good question. do the Democrats have any incentive to reform big tech? Who on one hand says, we're not a content policer, we're just a platform. And then on the other hand, right, censors what, you know, most would say would be predominantly conservative points of view. And I'm not talking about the Alex Joneses and the crazies and stuff like that. I'm talking about New York Post, what they did to the New York Post, what they did to the guy who's a, you know, director of the Border Patrol. And so I am. But the nation's got to do that. But I think what is going to take us there is going to be something really bad. And I feel bad saying this, but I was thinking, I don't know why this occurred to me yesterday, but I mean, it's going to be something really terrible, right? And we're all probably going to watch it on TV. And there's going to be no doubt in our minds that the rhetoric, the overheated rhetoric that is fueled by and it's kind of interesting if you really think about it, too. Think about this. What is the business? What is the actual business of Facebook and Twitter? Well, most would say, well, they're social media companies. No, that's not their business. That is the operational construct that they use. What is their business? Yeah. Yeah, we'll go there. So their business is what? Harvesting everything they can harvest about you from that cell phone. And then they take that data and they bundle it. And then they give access to you, very precise access, to people that want to sell you products and increase the efficiency of their sales. So I can buy this advertising knowing that instead of getting a 1% rate of return, I'm going to get a 3.5% rate of return. I mean, that's pretty, right? That's pretty robust difference in life. So that's what they do, right? That's their business. Their business is data harvesting you for people trying to sell you things. And so it's some, I mean, I think that, I don't think they are what they kind of portray themselves as. Those are just the means to what they do. Really what they do, their business model is harvesting you for companies that are looking to sell you things. And that's how they monetize them. So at some point, we have to figure that out as a democracy because it's. I don't think it's where it should be. I don't think it's where it should be. So, and we'll see who's going to be in charge of that. Interesting article. Had some interesting points about what's going to happen to the media. I got interested in the COVID thing based on a graphic in the Wall Street Journal. There's a graphic of the United States, and the hottest places for COVID are all in the upper Midwest. And I'm like, what? Not what I expected. Not what I expected. So then I kind of began to dig deeper into it. The media article in the Wall Street Journal entitled, "It's the End of an Era for the Media, No Matter Who Wins the Election." And so more and more often, we consume on-demand media through our electronic devices, your tablet, your phone, your laptop, right? And so a day of reconciliation for big media is coming. And it's already happened to a certain extent. The initial movement was from, you know, your broadcast networks, right, to cable networks. And then that migration continues from cable networks to online platforms, right? They can be accessed whenever somebody wants it at their own convenience, on demand, if you will. So, but President Trump, because of his use of the media, because of his availability to the media. Again, think about it. You see him on your TV every day talking to the American people. Never seen anything like it, right? And he's done it for so long now, you just take it for granted. It's no longer like, oh, the president's going to appear and make comments. He's waxing eloquent to the American people every hour, or maybe not so eloquent, as is his style. So the article says this. President Trump, after all, succeeded in making the old media great again, in particular through his obsession with it. His riveting show allowed much of the television news business, in particular, to put off a reckoning with technology towards more mobile devices and on-demand consumption that have changed all of our lives. But now, that change is coming. And it talks about the news business after Trump, right? It talks that, the president provided a lifeline to MSNBC and CNN. What happens when the president goes away, whether it's in one day or 4 years in one day? Is there the same demand, for Rachel Maddow's content and for CNN's blowtorch? And how much of that do you need to lose before their business models are wrecked? Yeah. So the president has put off the reconciliation that many have seen coming to the news industry. And then there's a whole wave of retirements, right? Dean Baquet at the New York Times is turning 66. And people believe he's leaving. Mr. Zucker at CNN is not getting along with Warner Media, right? CNN underperforming MSNBC as the network of opposition and of the major news networks, CNN is last. And so he's rumored to be out. And then there's also the issue of the top-down management of the news is now being questioned. This is a quote from a guy named, I think his first name is Norm Perlstein of the LA Times. The old top-down newsroom management is a thing of the past. Consent of the governed is something that you have to take pretty seriously. Well, what does that mean? And here's to me is what's frightening, is that so if all of our journalists are liberal, that means the slant in our reporting is going to be liberal as well. And if it doesn't fit our narrative, which is what we're seeing more and more through this election, right? And if it doesn't fit our narrative, then we're not going to run it. And that's why watching the Shelby Steele documentary, I think, is so necessary. Solutions come from the truth. And if anybody of any color thinks that the government is going to take care of you and take your life, it's the same thing I say in post-traumatic winning. If you think that numbing yourself and talking about it once every 2 weeks is the path to anything but endurance, you're kidding yourself. That's the government protocol. That's where somebody else is going to take you. The path to a great place goes straight through you. And I'd say the same thing is true in life. The path to a great life goes through you. But as my 17-year-old daughter said last night, Dad, you can't say that to anybody. Yeah, we know. So I think it's pretty interesting that, you know, there's going to be a reconciliation of the news business. The question is, what will it look like on the far side? The article then says that Twitter and Facebook have two major sources of pressure. The first comes from Australia and the European Union, where Germany has become the latest to push towards tight copyright restrictions. Quote, "We are now at an inflection point with digital platforms," Rod Sims, the chairman of the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, told me in an email. "The tide has turned all around the world as governments and antitrust enforcers now see the size of the challenge ahead." So that's from the EU and Australia. The second source of pressure is the United States, where the president has pushed to reveal and revise Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which protects platforms from being liable for what they publish while allowing them to moderate content. Think about that. I can't be held liable for what goes over the channel, but I police what I choose to please, which is the conundrum here in the United States. So anyway, so happy election day to you. Get out there and vote. If you know somebody that needs a ride, give them a call, give them a ride. And that's how we do it. The peaceful transition of power, even in the most bitter of political campaigns, is what the world will see from the United States of America. And then the question will be, can Americans work together? Now, again, my opinion, what you hear is from so many liberals is Donald Trump's the problem. Well, what you're going to see if he doesn't win is that these problems aren't going away because Donald Trump isn't there. That's kind of interesting. So good morning to you on this election day. Hope you're having a good day so far. The United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Good morning. This is dedicated to our democracy. And I say this knowing that it's kind of an empty hope because I don't know if most people are there. But, you know, there used to be a spirit in this country that after elections, you know, we put the election aside and we do our best for the American people. I think that sentiment is not shared by very many people in this burn it down day and age. So, it's dedicated to the idea that when the election's over, that those we elect turn to the work of tending to our democracy. And, in the words of our current president, to make it great, whatever that takes, being able to put differences aside, maybe be able to compromise, and to do what's in the best interest of the American people. Now, I say that with, and I'm cautiously pessimistic about it. Probably not even cautiously. I'm straight up pessimistic about it. But That's my hope. That's my hope on this election day here in on November 3rd in the year 2020.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
At 8:49 here on the Pacific Coast, time to check the news. You know, it's interesting the different laws in different states relative to political signs. I just saw a clip of video where people standing outside a polling place holding signs. In a lot of places around the country, all that signage has to come down on election day, on the eve of election day. So, interesting. Currently in Quantico, sunny and 61. Down the coast of Camp Lejeune, sunny and 60. Huh, interesting. 29 Palms, the sun is 71. Camp Lejeune is, no, Camp Pendleton, sunny and 62. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy. No, it is partly sunny and 74. I'm not used to Camp Smith with the sun coming up this time of day. In Okinawa, dark cloudy, 71. Down under in Darwin, it is dark cloudy in 83. In Oslo, Norway, it is cloudy, dark, and 44 degrees. At the home of All Marine Radio, it is partly sunny, 64 degrees, looking for a high of 71 today, 74 tomorrow. Joining me today is going to be the guy who started a YouTube channel for Marine Corps Tankers, and it's kind of taken off. And Marine Corps Tankers have been shown, literally shown the door by the Marine Corps. And so you're going to get a chance to meet. He's still on active duty. He's a major by the name of J.R. Vlasic. I think that's how you say it. It might be Vlasic. So anyway. you'll get a chance to meet him. We'll talk about his career. We'll talk about, you know, what it was like to be a tanker in the Marine Corps, and then have the Marine Corps announce, yeah, we're doing away with all tanks. Like, what? Did I hear that right? Yeah, you heard it right. So you're gonna meet him in about 15 minutes. So don't touch that dial. More of this fine program coming up after a very, very short break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
We used to get together every week. She's been home from her last deployment for months now, and I haven't seen her once.
He's just been different since he got back from Iraq. One minute he's ready to go, and the next he doesn't want anyone around.
The nightmares are back and seem to be getting worse. Shouldn't he be sleeping better after all these years?
A lot of people don't understand what veterans go through during their service or when they come back. And that's okay.
But everyone can help.
You can make a difference in the life of a veteran.
You stood by us when we were in uniform, so stand by us now.
Like my brother did, when he wouldn't take no for an answer.
Like my wife did, when she asked the right questions.
Like my friend did, when she made the call.
Take a stand for those who served our country.
If you're a veteran in crisis, or know one who is, the Confidential Veterans Crisis Line is here for you. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's service members and veterans are strong, forged out of bravery, sacrifice, and duty. They are diverse, unique, from all corners of the country, and thanks to their common experience, a family for life. But whether they served in lands far away or communities close to home, some of these men and women may face difficult times or even crisis, but sometimes reaching out for help can be the most challenging and worthwhile mission of all for veterans, service members, reserve, and National Guard. Thankfully, friends, family, and communities are standing by their service members and veterans now more than ever. We're all in this together. When you recognize something isn't right, make the call to the Veterans Crisis Line or Military Crisis Line. During times of crisis, reach out and call. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 or chat online at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, to the news we go. Top story in Stars and Stripes is states ready National Guard troops preparing for potential civil unrest following Election Day. So the scenario is no clear-cut winner, or there's enough of a chance that a winner can't be declared in certain counties in the nation, and that the vote-in or mail-in ballots have to be counted, and then we go through that rigmarole. And so the election, very close, is sent with recounts and all the rest of that. And then we go through the legal process of determining who actually won. So anyway, the National Guard being put on notice by different states. Air Force colonel to become first astronaut to join the Space Force. That in the news. Pentagon plans to open a school focused entirely on defeating drones. Probably long overdue. The Pentagon wants to open a new school in the coming years specifically to teach troops to spot and kill small enemy drones as the military seeks a uniform approach to defeating the small unmanned aircraft which officials have labeled a growing battlefield threat. According to Major General Sean Gainey, the leader of that new office, the UAS Academy will open it in 2024 in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. Quote, the small drone threat is evolving, Gainey said. Having a synergy at a future schoolhouse will help the force understand how to get after this problem. To me, this will be the challenge for of this is going to be like anti-tank weapons, like anti-anything else. And that is, you're going to see the thing about drones is that they have to be small. In order for them to be small, right, they have to be lightweight. Okay, as you find countermeasures that then force the drone to become more robust, you add weight, which adds size, which helps you defeat it, right? Larger size, easier to detect, blah, 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 blah. As you're able to barrage something out of the sky, you get a pulse, right? That negates it. So to me, the drone window is closing, in my opinion. And drones are going to have to get more sophisticated as more and more nations find ways to defeat them. So, a school dedicated to that. A roundup, another article in Stars and Stripes. A roundup of free food and discounts for veterans on Veterans Day. Come on. Many will ask for your DD-214 or other proof of service, or you can show up in uniform to get your free meal. Food and drink. Applebee's. Get a free meal. Baker Square. Free Rise and Shine breakfast for veterans. Let's see. Bob Evans. Free meal from a select menu. Buffalo Wild Wings, a free order of 10 boneless wings and fries. Dine in or take out. California Pizza Kitchen. Cattleman's Steakhouse, free 8-ounce sirloin steak. Chili's, active duty, free dine-in meal from a select menu, and it's dine-in only, not takeout. Wow, this is a pretty long list. Cracker Barrel, a free slice of double fudge Coca-Cola cake. You're not going to see that offered at Whole Foods, I'm pretty sure. Dunkin' Donuts, get a free donut. You can get Famous Dave's, a free chopped pork sandwich. Friendly's, you can get a free burger and fries at Friendly's. Golden Corral, free meal and a beverage card. Let's see. IHOP, free stack of red, white, and blue pancakes and a free breakfast combo. Krispy Kreme, free donut and a small coffee. Little Caesars, a free lunch combo. Four slices of deep dish pizza and a beverage. How do you beat that? Longhorn Steakhouse. Free appetizer or dessert from a select menu. That's kind of weak. Let's see. Olive Garden, free meal from a limited menu, which seems to be pretty standard. Red Lobster, free appetizer, free dessert. Red Robin, free tavern double burger, whatever the hell that is. Ruby Tuesday, free burger or sandwich. Shoney's, all-you-can-eat breakfast bar. Can't beat that. Sizzler, a free meal from a limited menu that includes a 6-ounce tri-tip steak. Starbucks, free coffee to veterans. Texas Roadhouse, vouchers for a free meal. Handed out in the parking lot. And then there's some other stuff. Target's offering 10% discount. Office Depot, 25% off qualifying regular and sale purchases. How about that? National Parks, Gold Star families, and veterans are eligible for free admission to national parks. How about that? And at Great Clips, you can get your haircut. That in the news. Wall Street Journal. Voters head to the polls on Election Day. White House Senate in focus as long campaigns wind down. Stock market was up about 500 points in early trading today. Story about the Vienna terror attack. He had a previous terrorism conviction, 20 years old, was let out of prison last year after serving part of a term on a terrorist-related charge. Interesting story about fewer computer chips being made in the United States and the implications of that as American production falls and Chinese production rises. And from the opinion section, interesting little editorial piece. Trump is terribly flawed, but the alternative is simply terrible. So that from the Wall Street Journal. One story in USNI News. Lawmakers argue that the U.S. must divest legacy systems to keep up with China's technology growth. All right. So, article written by John Grady, the co-chairs of the bipartisan Congressional Future Defense Task Force, said America will lose the advanced technology race from artificial intelligence to biotechnology with China unless the Pentagon makes room for new investment by discarding legacy systems. Seth Moulton, former Marine, and Jim Banks said their report to the House Armed Service Committee should serve as a wake-up call. So, what are the legacy, right? Moulton and Banks said the eight-member panel, four Democrats, four Republicans, unanimously agreed on the report's recommendations and looking at future investments in artificial intelligence, biotechnology, and cloud computing as a 20th century Manhattan project. Citing the change that General David Berger has undertaken since becoming the Marine Corps Commandant, Moulton said he's doing exactly what we need to do in all the services by developing the operating concepts first. And then everything else will follow. I'm looking to see if they're talking about what systems they're talking about. There's one picture of a Marine Corps tank. So what are the other systems that you're talking about? And I'm looking. I don't see them identified. So anyway, that in the news. So interesting. New Pentagon study says not enough rape cases are going to trial with proper evidence. Now, this is an ongoing discussion. When you listen to experts talk about this, military legal experts, they say, what would happen if you gave sexual assault, created a different way where it took that away from commanding officers? And legal experts say, well, you would see, because commanding officers have broad jurisdiction, they can bring somebody to court-martial on whatever evidence they choose. And they often feel pressure to prosecute without appropriate evidence. And that is what comes out at the court-martial. And then, you know, whoever's been charged is acquitted. And so... so they say that if you had more professional people involved in it, what you're going to get is far fewer prosecutions, which will ultimately lead to maybe a higher percentage of convictions overall, but they don't see the delta as being that great. So it's kind of interesting. This Pentagon study says, again, headline, not enough rape cases are going to trial with proper evidence. A group of criminal justice experts who reviewed nearly 2,000 military rape cases found that a good number had been sent to court-martial by their commanding officers, the convening authority, without enough evidence to convict, and that those cases undermine the military justice system's ability to properly prosecute sexual assaults. They found that of all of the penetrative sexual assault cases sent to trial, 30% of them, or 73 total cases, did not have enough evidence for a conviction, according to the October report. Predictably, 71 of the 73 resulted in acquittals. So this discussion about how the military does sexual assault prosecution continues, right, with recommendations from them. Top five stories, then we'll take a break. National Guard Election Day update. More than 3,600 troops have been activated in 16 states. Two, as Election Day arrives, a fight about military ballots takes center stage. Do they get here on time? Blah, 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 blah. Number three, what the defense industry is seeing and saying about the election. Number four, five races with veteran candidates to watch on election night. I'll tell you what those are. One is in Arizona, right? That's the top one. Martha McSally, a veteran, versus another veteran, Mark Kelly. McSally of the Air Force, Kelly of the Navy. Virginia's 2nd District, Elaine Luria versus Scott Taylor. Luria is a 1997 graduate of the Naval Academy. Scott Taylor is a former U.S. Navy SEAL, served in Iraq and South America as a sniper, served in Congress from 2016 to 2018, sponsored a number of veteran and military benefits bills before being unseated by Luria. So this is kind of a rematch between two veterans. So that's kind of interesting. She won last time by 2% of the vote. Mitch McConnell versus Amy McGrath. Amy McGrath. Mitch McConnell served in the Army Reserve in 1967 for 5 weeks before being medically retired. I didn't know that. McGrath's military experience, much more extensive, right? She served for 20 years in the Marine Corps, including 89 combat missions as a pilot in Afghanistan. She was a political science instructor at the Naval Academy and has gone home to take on Mitch McConnell. Georgia Senate, Doug Collins. The four-term Republican House member is a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force Reserve, where he serves as a chaplain. His military service dates back more than 30 years, including time as an active duty Air Force and active duty in the Navy. 5-month deployment to Iraq in 2008. So running for Senate in Georgia. So there's a few races that are involved veterans. And number five, Khomeini, the supreme Iranian leader, says that Iran's U.S. policy will not be affected, right? Will not be affected by whoever wins the election. So we'll take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it. We're going to talk tanks. We're going to talk YouTube, a channel devoted to them. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.